Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 9 of The Gathering Storm, a podcast aimed at the average 40k player by average 40k players, and definitely less than average technological 40k people. But on the plus side, I'd like to just give myself a huge shout out. Successful upload, first time this time. So that's a win. It's only taken me 8 uploads to figure it out that I have to download it twice because it never works. But we got there, and that's exciting. With me tonight, as always, is the stalwart Ben. How are we going, Big Ben?
For a Thursday, leading into Friday, leading into Saturday, which then leads into a trip to Bali, I am doing Wunderbar.
You bloody better be, mate. Like we were just saying before, like, you're going to Bali and I'm going to the toilet more often than I should today, which is a bit unfortunate, but...
It seems you've got Bali belly without being in Bali, so
yeah.
Don't send your belly vibes down the podcast, whatever you
do. No, we'll not do, but feeling much better than I was this morning, which is good, and we're here for, most excitedly, for part 2 of the Eldar Lore episode, but as always, as we like to do, we're going to dribble shit for a bit about things first, before we get stuck into the meat of the episode. Ben, what's been happening in your land?
We have to hit the explicit tag. Said shit.
Ben, I hit the explicit tag every time. Okay. Like, literally, when my mate Theo posts a meme in the group that says, that summarizes our episode talking about Yvraine and Bobby G having sex, of literally Jane Silent Bob saying, there goes homeboy, he fucked a Martian once. Like, every time, Ben, I just click explicit.
Okay. Well, Adam Napier showed me some Bobby G and Yvraine hentai, so...
Personal collection, or...
Look, it's out there for everyone. But what's been happening? Okay, look, not a lot since I went 2-1.
Look out, guys, here he comes.
And I do check my ranking on the ITC every week, and I have dropped to 94 now. I was at 90, so that means people ahead of me are playing games. Can you just stop until I get my next tournament in? All right, it's not about you.
It's about Ben.
This is about me. I'm average, and I'm trying to stay that way. So I'm not benchmarking anyone higher or lower than me. It's just a bit of a personal goal this year. I want to stay inside the 100. I got a cheeky game in last night. A gentleman on the SA40K page, Thomas Capriotti, was looking for a game. I'd never met Thomas, didn't know what he was playing. He's pretty new to the game, brought his orcs into my knights. Look, it wasn't a great time for him. But the good thing is, I've recruited him to our Neophyte stream, which is how I started all this mess. And so hopefully get him into the competitive scene, getting those reps in and understanding how competitive play works a little bit more. So well done, Thomas, and hope to see you at the next Neophyte Acolyte.
Look at you overly tall pillar of the SA community.
Mate, I can't speak highly enough of it. I was telling Adam Napier the other day, I've gone from Neophyte to podcast in 12 months. I don't do anything in halves.
Nah, it's balls to the wall or nothing, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It, coming from a guy that's had cancer twice, so I am not here to fuck spiders. I am literally here to make the most of everything. So what about you, Minches? What have you bought?
So I bought some terrain because it looks cool,
right?
And that's when I thought I would post up that meme about it seems like I do have a problem. That is all I have bought for myself. Businesses aside, that's all I bought for myself. But I had something else exciting happen on Sunday. I had my third game of 10th. Look out, guys. Look out. Third game of 10th, this guy.
Who did you play and how did you go?
I played a good friend of mine, Nathan Bleakley. He's one of the Normal Blokes. He's actually just recently jumped onto the Normal Blokes podcast as well. He's rocking the Krons at the moment. When we organized to have a game, he said he was keen and I was keen. Everything was great. And he said, yeah, but can we start at 7 a.m. on a Sunday? And I was like, I mean, yeah, but why? And he turned around and said, I like, if I can get a game done and be, you know, done by 10, 11, I've got the rest of my Sunday to do stuff, like that, that's a good thing for me. I was like, all right, fair enough. You know, I've got a 1-year-old son. I'll be up at 7 anyway. It doesn't bother me. So we kicked off. He's gotten a fair few reps in. He's been pushing pretty hard. He was at the last team tournament. He's coming to the team tournament next weekend with his Crons. And I tried out a list that I've been playing around with that I was pretty excited to give it a go. Look, Crons are tough. Especially, like, I never had the joy of playing a 370-point Wraith Knight, which just deletes a unit by itself. But Crons are tough. Nathan's a great player. He definitely may have spiked just a little bit on his saves, and I didn't cry at all about it for many, many days afterwards. Basically, bottom of turn 5, if nothing worked for me in team scoring, it's going to be a 12-8 win to him. There was something I could do which was super low risk, which made it 11-9, and I could push to make it a 10-10. So I pushed to make it a 10-10. Unfortunately, his Overwatch killed the warp spider that I needed to live, and ended up being 11-9 or 75-68 to him. With my third ever game, I was pretty damn happy playing the list. Yeah. His list is really well constructed. I'm not going to give too much away because I don't want to do him like that just for a team tournament. I know it's going to change a little bit, but his list was pretty well constructed. I wish no prisoners still existed, Ben, because I probably killed 80 of his 40 Necron warriors, which is interesting math, like at least 80, and it was very, very depressing. I had an absolute blast. It was great, good to be playing, good to put some stuff on the table. And then up until this morning when they went Wraith Guard can no longer shoot into combat, I was like, sweet, 20 Wraith Guard, let's go, let's play around with this stuff. And now I messaged my team going back to the drawing board, and it's super exciting.
Told me what list you're taking, and of course I'm not going to reveal it now.
No, that's not for this. That's a super secret surprise list.
But in terms of ramen, and if people like ramen noodles like I do, you do have a very, very generous serve of chili in there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, it's very, very spicy.
There is a lot of spice in this list, guys. So if you are playing in that team's tournament,
yeah. And then the list that I was talking to you about for the big TNAO, North Alliance Open, that absolute legend of a list that I'm super excited to run, which I won't reveal now because I'm going to save it.
You told me about with the, when you were naming the thing.
Quiet, sweet child. Quiet, sweet. We'll wait till list submission's locked and then I'll shout it to the heavens because I'm going to be like, yep. I instantly rock up to the table and win just on list composition alone.
Ooh. We've just wasted 8 minutes dribbling shit.
I could waste 80 minutes dribbling shit in the toilet,
I could waste 80 minutes dribbling shit, but
We've got a fair few questions to get through, right?
We do. We've got 37 minutes to get through a whole lot of questions, so we'd like to keep these episodes at about 45 minutes, long enough for you to stay engaged, not fall asleep. And if we do need to go over, hey, we'll just spill it into another episode. We are getting lots of entrants for the Corn Army donation, and we are only 43 people away from the Lionel giveaway. Keep spreading the word and doing the things. Now, just to recap what we discussed last week, I actually have no idea because it's not my thing. What did we cover off last week?
So we covered a fair bit last week, some of the really, really good questions, one of which I want to revisit because I may have listened to yet another lore video in my time. But we looked at things like the webway, what that looks like, how that works. We looked at who your brain would have sex with. Thanks, Lockie Gordon, for more of the same questions of the same. We looked at like how the psychers work. Exodites, which I'm going to come back to because I definitely am excited to share more about that. We looked at the Phoenix Lords a little bit, and we're going more into aspects and that kind of thing in tonight's episode. So just before we get too much further, Exodites, 100% legit. Dinosaurs, 100% a thing. Literally listen to a lore video and now reading a story, Path of the Renegade by Andy Chambers, who looks at the Dark Eldar predominantly, and they're talking about the dinosaurs on an Exodite world and how they want to capture some. And I'm just like, don't ever bring out models, G-Dub, because there's only so many cabinets I can fit in my hobby room.
Looks like we're going to need a bigger boat.
Oh, no. As my son says with a quite exuberant finger wag, no. And I go, yeah, okay, no more. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at that stage. And there was a few questions we didn't even get to, so I had to make sure I get to them tonight because I've had people badger me about them. But Ben, okay. what's question number one?
I'm curious to know about this one. You've populated them in to the chat here, so I'm sorry I can't call out the names of the people that did ask them, but thank you to those that did ask a question. What's the purpose of Guardians? Why are they different to Storm Guardians?
Alrighty, so the purpose of Guardians is because the Eldar are such a dying race, their numbers are so small that a standing militia is required in every single craft world. So every single Eldar knows how to fight, learns how to fight.
Male or
Not
female.
Only that, male or female. They don't discriminate. They let everyone die equally. And because of this, like, they all learn exactly how to fight. But because they live for thousands and thousands of years, instead of an Imperial Guardsman who might get 20 years into a career if he's lucky, you know, these Eldar militia will train for 100 plus years. So even their very, very basic militia troops are better at fighting than most veterans of other armies, which is super dope. And the YouTube video I listened to spoke about the martial nature of Eldar and how they were created for war. That was their purpose, like Space Marines eat your heart out. Guardians versus Storm Guardians. I guess you look at most armies, why do they have different regiments? Why do they have different specializations? Sometimes you need to lay down with ring fire of shuriken catapults. Other times you need to charge forward with Dragon's Breath Flamers and Fusion Guns and Aeldari Power Swords and try and chop them up with your insane speed. But as someone who recently got their 60 Guardians back, my team challenged me. They said, you can't write a bad list with Eldar. So I immediately wrote a list with all 60 Guardians and it said, there you go, bad list. And they went, yep, you don't do things in half measures. I was like, no, I can write a bad list. Watch me.
I can do it. So you mentioned that the Guardians train for like 100 years. Is there like a minimum amount of time that they need to train before they'll see like active service? Do you know?
So the way that anything in Eldar works, and this is good because it touches on some of the other questions as well, but because when they weren't so singularly focused in following the path of Eldar and the way that they work, which is kind of like their philosophical beliefs, think of Buddhism almost, they need to focus on a path so that they don't overindulge, overexpose themselves to too many different feelings and sensations. So when they start the journey on a path, it's to the exclusion of all else, and they'll stay on that path until they master it. Now, whatever that path looks like, we'll obviously have different times of mastering it, and it's only very rarely that they will become trapped on a path. The majority of that time is when they become an Aspect Warrior, and they become trapped on the path, and they become an Exarch. So they actually can't leave the shrine. That's where they stay. They're like the temple wardens. That's their deal. But as far as fighting in war, the path of the Guardian is the first thing that they learn.
Right. So there's no prescribed amount of time. So it was just touching on, you said that they live for thousands of years and they train for 100 years. It was more, all right, do you have to train for 100 years before you can go fire your shuriken gun and killing
no, it's no. It's basically like you know, most people, it's when you have mastered the path, then you move on to the next path.
Okay, that's pretty sick. All right, so it's indentured servitude for the Eldar. If you're in a craft world, everyone, it's a military state in essence. Probably no different to say Finland. Everyone in Finland has to do compulsory service.
South Korea with their national service, etc.
Well, I guess that's Finland too. They're so close to Russia that they can't afford to not have a mobilized military. And you also touched on that, you know, they do train for 100 years plus, and it's probably like the Australian Army. They're often benchmarked as very, very capable soldiers, even the run-of-the-mill grunts, as you'd call them, because they just spend all their time training, not so much fighting. Their elite status is quite high. Anyway, enough of that waffle. Something that I was really interested in, and given that they're very meta favorite at the moment, is the Wraiths. So Wraith Lords, Wraith Knights, Wraith Guard. And you were mentioning that the Wraith Knights are a twin.
Yep.
The Wraith Guard are ghosts in a skeletal existence. And the question is, what's the purpose of them? Obviously, it's very militant. Is it just another way to get more bodies mobile to create these
beings? Pretty much. So the purpose of it is the fact that they are that dying race. 95% of their entire population was killed in the cataclysmic birth of She Who Thirsts. So it's a case of, look, we can let these spirit stones stay in the Infinity Circuit, which is, you know, this wonderful place, but we don't have enough numbers to beat this army back, so when we die, they'll just destroy the Infinity Circuit and all of these guys will be captured by Slaanesh, or we can pull them out, put them into these suits, constructs, whatever, and get them to fight again to make sure that they can continue to have that existence.
Fantastic. So it's kind of like recycling.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like have two bites at the cherry, slash, Eldar are not known for being overly tough or resilient. So the Wraith Guard, the Wraith Lords, etc., they are that living Wraithbone construct. They don't bleed. Like, the suits can be destroyed, the spirit stones can be destroyed, but, you know, you chop off an arm of them, they're still going to keep on coming at you. So it gives them that really resilient army, okay, which is needed.
All right. Another provocative question. Are Drukhari like the baddies of the Eldar population? And an explicit ha-ha. I too, am interested in this one. They abhor the witch. They're not psychic, from what I'm led to believe.
Yeah, look, Drukhari, when I was younger, I saw it very, very black and white. Eldar are the good guys, Dark Eldar are the bad guys, and the Harlequins are like the neutral guys.
If you played Oldhammer, there was High Elves and Dark Elves.
And Wood Elves.
And Wood Elves. So you transpose that, you've got Eldar, Dark Eldar, and
the Harlequins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, as someone who played High Elves in Warhammer Fantasy, I was very much on this. Look, asking who the good guys and the bad guys is in 40k is definitely a heavily loaded question, because it is very so subjective. Dark Eldar are the Eldar who fled into the Webway as Slaanesh came about. They have a completely different way of surviving, and that way of surviving, yeah, look, they bravely ran away. That way of surviving for them is literally causing fear and pain and feeding on it. And that's how they live. That's how they can live for so long, but they have to continue to do it. So that's why they rape, pillage, plunder, capture slaves, bring them back, have their, you know, gladiatorial combats. Like, it's literally how they survive.
So Drukhari does not care from where the pain comes.
No,
as long as the pain flows.
Exactly. And given the homunculi abilities, most Drukhari can be brought back to life from the smallest of fragments. And that's how they escape Slaanesh. Like, you might, you know, kill an Archon, and then they bring back a finger. And the Master Homunculi can rebuild that entire Archon from that one finger. Some of the most skilled are actually able to do it from ash. So you have to be, like, really, really careful about how you get rid of them. But the easy answer is, yeah, Dark Eldar are the baddies, because they don't care. They are one of the most actively selfish races out there.
Okay.
And their spiky models always poke me and make me bleed, so they're definitely the baddies.
Well, I think Magnature cases exist because of Drukhari, so...
Shout out Pete, local legend up here. He's an absolute gem of a bloke. He came to my RTT. He has hit me up a bit about Eldar stuff. He's a wizard of painting, and he makes some incredible cases, so...
Oh, I've got one of his cases. I use that shit all the time.
My mate Brayden went to Ark, and his display thing was his face just stretched out. It's a very disturbing case. Yeah, so,
I'm not down with that.
No, I was like, ugh. But especially because I know Brayden. No, I'm just kidding. I love you, Brayden. Yeah, great bloke with that. Look, they are definitely good cases to protect you from that. What's next?
Okay, so it's not so clear cut that the Drakari are the baddies. They are the baddies. They're in the webway. They fled. They got sad. And I'm going to call them not the baddies. I'm going to call them the emos of Eldar.
Oh, but they're not sad at all. They're so happy when they kill and rape and pillage and plunder. Like, they live for it.
So they're the
BDSM.
Psychotic BDSM.
Yeah.
Okay. Rightio. Now, there's... what is your favorite Drakari unit type based on the lore and why?
Drakari unit type?
Because the question's been asked of Harlequin, so I'll get you to ask that. But whilst we're feeding on Drakari, the same question's been asked about Drakari.
What's my favourite Drakari unit type and why? Look, from a lore perspective, it's very, very different from a tabletop perspective. From a lore perspective, I like your stereotypical Kabbalite warriors. And that's because they have the ambition to climb much, much higher than they should. But they're still, you can still connect with them. Tabletop wise, I will never, ever, ever forget reading the Wargear entry for Mandrake circa 6th edition, where their weapon was, and I quote verbatim, evil looking blades. Not evil blades, just evil looking blades. And I went, I have to love this unit on the table because they are literally armed with evil looking blades. And this is before they got a shooting profile or anything like that, so that's pretty dope. I don't want to say Talos or Kronos because I've been bad touched by them too many times. Queensland Masters a few years ago, I went up against 14 of them with Eldar when Eldar were not good and had like a medium loss, so I was pretty happy about that. But yeah, they're probably the two there. And for Harlequins, I literally reread the novella Mask of Vile, which is about a Harlequin troop which goes to an outpost of Drakari and the performances they give, and I just absolutely love the Solitaire. The Solitaire is just a kick-ass character who legitimately ate the soul of an Archon, and that's what helps protect him from Sinesh. The problem with Harlequins is they are doomed. From the moment they become a Solitaire, they're doomed. Sinesh will get them. There's no if, buts, or ands bar one, and if that one doesn't happen, Sinesh will capture their soul. So it's about what they can do before they get captured. The only way that solitaires can be saved, and it doesn't happen very often, is if Kegarach, the Laughing God, actually intervenes and saves them. So yeah, solitaires are just badass.
So do you reckon Kegarach has a bit of a side hustle with Sinesh?
Nah, Kegarach ran away like a little bitch from Sinesh, so...
Oh, sorry. So it's not like that guy in Game of Thrones, what was his name, Craster, donating babies to the White Walkers.
Nah.
Out in the...
Wildling area. Yeah.
The Wildling area. Okay. Huh. All right. There's, just scrolling down here, someone asked, and just... going back to Wraith Knights, what happens when they're not fighting? Do they have like Wraith Knight daycare centers?
So the spirit stones just go back into the infinity circuit and the suits lie dormant. Thanks, Ben. I remember who asked that one. There is no little Wraithbone daycare center where the spirit seer child minders go, or go sit in the corner and watch you know, Resemi Street or something. Yeah. Do you mean Miss Wraithel?
Miss Wraithel. That was fantastic.
Oh, I'm amazing.
Why did the Eldar save the Cadians after the planet broke?
Okay, so Eldar hate Chaos. Chaos is big bad for them, the biggest of the bads. And Eldrad, along with the Bealtaine Craftwell, before it was fractured, they wanted to try and save as many Cadians as possible, because these are not only people who are really, really good at fighting for Mon Cays, but also trying to help foil Abaddon's plan to destroy the Cadian pylons and things like that. So when the planet was doomed, they were definitely trying to rescue as many as they could.
Okay. So one vibe I've picked up in two episodes is they're probably the least Xenos of all the Xenos.
Inquisitors would literally have your head for that, because there's a few that hate that comparison. I've read enough Inquisitor novels, they're like, no, they're all evil. But at the end of the day, they are the most alike. Them and Tau are the most alike, because Tau will do whatever they can through diplomacy. The problem with Eldar is they see the big picture, but not the little picture. So they see a governor who's becoming corrupt, and they can see the future, and the planet's going to fall to chaos. So they go, cool, we'll solve that problem. We won't tell, I don't know, Space Marines. We'll just go assassinate the governor. Problem solved. And they don't think, oh, maybe the Imperium's going to be a bit pissed off that we just killed this totally loyal governor and come after us. So they're really good at seeing the big picture and making that big picture reality, but it's the small human details that they miss because they're not human.
Okay. I'm going to stick by they're the least Xenos of the Xenos.
They are the best. Yes.
It kind of seems as though they would join forces with the Imperium for the greater good.
They do quite often. Quite often they do.
And you say the same for Tau, and this isn't a Tau cast, but I guess Tau's one that's always sort of interested me. I can't stand the models. They look way too Gundam. And I'm really not into Gundam. But the actual Tau beings and the little bit of the lore I've read, I'm like, these guys seem okay. Why are they Xenos?
Because they're communists.
Oh, they're communists, right, okay.
The greater good. It's all about the greater good, yeah?
The greater good.
Oh, shut up with your bloody greater good.
The greater good. Okay. We have lots of questions here, but I'm trying to sort of get them to all sink into each other so we're not bouncing around.
Mate, bounce around. Keep my brain sharp, yeah? Go hard.
There was something about the old gods. Admired, and the orcs and the necrons were created in order to combat them.
Yeah.
Could you provide further context into what that means?
Talks about the war in heaven as well. Look, so, to put in perspective, mankind has been in the Ascendancy for 10,000 years, right? Eldar were the dominant race for anywhere between 20 million to 65 million years.
Wow.
Where there were no challenges. So, the Old Ones is mentioned, but it's this huge myth thing. Then you've got the Eldar gods who made the Eldar race, but they were made completely for fighting to defeat the Necrons, and the Eldar did defeat the Necrons. That's how the Satan got, you know, they're all shards now, just like our avatar is. That's what they were bred for, was to defeat the Necrons. Now, on top of this, once the Necrons gone, there was something called the Quarks, which is the predecessor to the Orcs. Now, they used to be intelligent. They used to be able. They used to be much more civilized, but the Eldar just beat the shit out of them so hard that they actually devolved into the orcs that we know today. So the Old Ones were made, you know, or helped make the Eldar with the Eldar gods to defeat the Necrons. That was their main purpose, and then they were the sole unchallenged power of the universe for millions and millions and millions and millions of years, which is why they are so arrogant, because they have that history of knowing that we were the baddest motherfuckers for, you know, well before you were a worm in the ground, and there's every chance that well after you're a speck of thought. So deep lore about the Old Ones is hard to come by, and I'm always loath to always believe what I read on the internet. It doesn't always come up perfectly. So that, yeah.
It's more fan lore with the old ones, is what I gather.
It's, yeah.
Sort of choose your own adventure. Call it historical fiction.
Yep.
Okay. You talked about Elder helped create Slaanesh. Can you give us an understanding of what happened and why it happened in order to create Slaanesh?
Alrighty, I'm going to do a TLDR.
TLDR, just to make sure. Let's do it.
Yeah, just because I could talk about this for 30 minutes. Every Elder is psychic. Every single Elder. Their psychic energy during their debauchery, during their depravity, when they were going balls to the walls, apeshit, built up. To the point where there was like a cataclysmic explosion. Imagine every single Elder is leaking some gas, and the more crazy stuff they do, the more gas they leak. And you've got this huge population spread across the universe. It gets to the point where someone strikes a match, or it gets too much and it explodes. That explosion was the birth of Slaanesh, the Chaos God, which obviously took on all the negative things that the Elder were doing at the time. That's how that happened.
Okay.
There we go.
So, yeah, right. There's a TLDR.
Yeah, if anyone wants a much more in-depth answer, feel free to PM me and I will go into extravagant detail. But I am wary of the fact that we've only got 15, 20 minutes left.
Hold my beer. Well, we are getting through it. Are the striking scorpions ever held in suspicion by other Elder because of the original Phoenix Lord?
Alrighty. So for those of you who don't know, the original Phoenix Lord is no longer a Phoenix Lord and goes by the name of Drazar, Master of Blades. So Ara, the original Phoenix Lord of the striking scorpions, turned bad. Long story short. Turned bad, defected, went to Dark Elder and is Drazar, Master of Blades. Corandris is the second Phoenix Lord for the Striking Scorpions, and I know that some people are going to be like, oh, but Shining Spears and, you know, Warp Spiders haven't even had one. I didn't choose it. I'm just saying what happened. Yes, Ben, it's a lovely Corandris model. You're very welcome. And the way I see it, no. No, because the Striking Scorpions themselves have proved themselves time after time after time. Corandris runs a pretty tight ship. It's not like Alton Saar, where the entire craft world was locked inside the webway, don't speak above whispers and refuse to take their helmets off. Like, they're not super sus. So, I don't think so.
Do you think that striking scorpions were modelled off of the Predator?
I'm not going to go into IP infringement at all here, because I think they look cool, and I would love to see some new plastic models of them sometime soon.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, do they look like... do they have a likeness? It's not our IP.
And the next question that we have to go to is what, Ben?
What happened to the original Elder homeworld? Did they have one?
Look, this is an easy and a difficult question to answer. The easy part is everyone has an origin, but the difficult part is it's 20 to 65 million years ago, and they don't really cover that in lore. If you're looking at even the Exodite worlds, those are worlds that the Eldar created, and it took a couple of million years for each one to become a planet that they could actually live on. So, who the hell knows, unfortunately?
Who the hell does know? Well, it's one thing about Eldar lore, and look, as an Eldar neophyte in many senses, and...
we'll call you a guardian, mate. None of this neophyte rubbish here, yeah?
If I'm an Elder Guardian, I was actually at my FLGS last night playing that game at 10th, and I walked past the Black Library stand, and I've got this 5-hour flight on Saturday night to Bali, and I thought, I can smash a novel in that. I'm going to pick up an Elder book. Nothing. Went to every bookshop today, including a G-Dubs, to try and find an Elder novel. Nothing. Nothing, no one. Space Marine. I went to every second-hand bookshop in Adelaide, where I know there is small caches of 40k novels. Nothing Elder. It's either in high demand and no one parts with it, or it's just...
It, doesn't exist. I wish you'd let me know sooner. I would have sent you one of my books. Yeah, I've got a few, like the Farseer copy.
I actually did ask you.
I told you some. Let me see if I can send you some digitally, okay?
Okay.
Does that work for you?
I have iBooks app on my phone, so...
Cool. I'll see if I can send some digitally to you.
Anyway, so what I was alluding to is... I'm finding it really hard to get into the lore with Eldar beyond this podcast and what you tell me, beyond, you know, the Wikipedia of Warhammer. What do they call it? Fanhammer?
Lexiconum.
Lexiconum, yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Would you say they're reliable sources? Are they...
I mean, everything on the internet you take with a grain of salt, but I've definitely done a fair bit of reading on that. As far as lore goes, you're better off getting like 5th, 6th, 7th edition codexes. But when they especially started getting chunky and they had a decent amount of lore in them, that's probably your best bet. I'm actually just started trying to chase down the Gathering Storm series for me to read and then send to you to read. So it's...
Okay.
What I'm hearing is that Games Workshop should employ me through Black Library to write Eldar lore. And we'll finally have Avatars of Kane that don't die to frickin' Space Marines.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. Now, you've mentioned a lot that the Eldar are a dying race. What do you think the likely outcome is? Do they stand any chance of revegetating?
100%, and I will be the most
bias out of it. Take your hard-on for Eldar out of it. All right, because everyone knows you've got a hard-on for Eldar. Yeah. Take that out. How are they going to fix this? How are they going to bounce back?
Look, the way that I would like to see it happen would be them begin to repopulate Beeltarn, who are definitely the most martial and who have actively fought to make it happen. I think there's always a chance, yeah? They find some Exodite worlds, find some lost craft worlds. Eldrad does some sick-ass spell, some cool mumbo-jumbo. Like, it definitely could happen. How I have a feeling that Games Workshop would make it happen is we'd end up with half-Eldar. And they'd breed with humans, and they would become a new race, and that's how the Eldar race would survive. And I would be very sad if that happens. So don't listen to that part, G-Dub.
Okay, so Bobby G and Yvraine, the bachelorette of...
make the sexy fun time and...
Yeah, correct, of the 41st millennium. Yvraine, will you take this rose? Of course, Robert. And they go and they make a sexy time and have little Bobby Yvraines. And yeah, so what do they become? Not muggles.
Half-bloods,
yeah.
Ooh, oh, God, fucking no.
We can't talk about that. We can't
that's other IP.
half-castes. Yeah, you can't say that anymore. The British and the Dutch bred for a time, didn't they? Look what happened.
Hi.
Hi.
That's me. There's one question I have to answer because I've been pushed to answer it, and this is one I've been harassed about, and I'm more than happy to answer it, but it's the which aspect shrine is the most dangerous to fight for. And I spent a long time thinking about this, and then as I was rereading another Eldar book, I was like, oh, this is easy. Warp spiders is the most dangerous. The reason being is their warp jump generators literally transport them through, you guessed it, the warp, which is not a good place for Eldar to be. And that's how they travel around. So in sheer risk factor of horrible, eviscerating eternity of torture from Slaanesh, warp spiders, 100%.
Okay. Also, because I have some gorgeous metal models that came in my haul.
Yeah, that are almost 30 years old. Ben, they're almost 30 years old.
Yeah, I know. I have some gorgeous metal, Dark Reaper metal models.
Yeah, me too.
What's the go with Dark Reapers? Because they kind of look Drakari.
So, Dark Reapers are Caelum and Chicane's aspect of death. Death from afar.
Right. Right.
That's how they work. So they are the long range touch of death. So not Dark Eldar per se, but that's their kind of shtick.
Yeah. All right. So they're a dark element of Eldar without being Dark Eldar.
100%. There's definitely dark elements of Eldar. 100%. Okay. We've spoken about sacrifices and things like that. Like, they're not... I mean, no one in 40K is great, but, you know, they have their flaws.
They have their flaws. Okay. So, the one thing as a hobbyist now, I think you can get from playing Eldar is such the variety of model. And coming from someone who's been painting Space Marines, you know, Ultramarines is quite vanilla. It's quite boring. Heavy metal style. Ultramarine blue. Bit of ink. Highlight McCrag. Move on. As a hobbyist, I think Eldar brings a lot of flavor. And from a lore perspective, they're even more flavoursome. And now on the table, they're currently S tier. Although, did not win Tacoma Open.
Bloody custodes.
Bloody custodes. But are featuring very heavily on stat check. So yeah. Between Eldar, GSC, Imperial Knights, Custodes, and Necrons. How long do you think they'll have their time in the sun for? Or do you think they always have?
They definitely have not always had their time in the sun. As a someone who has played them through the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, I think GW's at a point now with this second little update that if they keep on doing all these mini updates every month, it's too much too quick.
Well, they've backed themselves into a corner with these data cards that they've released. They can't change rules as much. It's mostly going to be points. The FAQ removes a sentence, changes a word.
Adds a word.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think we're at the stage now, after this latest round, we'll have to give it... You know, we've almost got to give it a month to get the data back to see how things work, because, you know, some of the things that Eldar were using have had that little bit of a touch. I don't know. I could never, looking at how the Spirit Seed was written, I could never be someone who tried to bring a Wraithguard back in my opponent's command phase. But rules as written, if that's how it's interpreted by the TO, there were people who probably did, and I look at that and go, that seems dumb to me. That and my Spirit Seer has got epic challenged out by bloody Satan. So they, by the way, Satan kills Spirit Seer every time, in case you're wondering.
You're right.
So it's a real rough time, but yeah,
your
look,
brain
I think
kills Crusader Knight every time.
Go your brain. Go your brain. But yeah,
I've still got PTSD about that.
Oh, look, there's always those happy PTSD memories, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There is. So yeah, Eldar. I'm staring at a whole heap of models that I'm sure my wife's really happy have been on the kitchen table for a month now.
They're not my models, are they?
Your Eldar.
Remember that box of Eldar?
No, I mean, I have so much Eldar. I probably got as much Eldar as you. Said no one ever. No, you don't have to turn the camera on your laptop and show me your room.
No, I don't.
We have exactly 1 minute and a bit.
I'm just going through the questions super quick to see if there's any that I can answer.
Alright, well, you go through them and I'll plug the Dragon's Lair at
St.
Mary's. Hey guys, just do the things. Jump onto the website, buy something from Phil, and tell Phil I sent you. And our friend up in the QLD.
Yeah, so that's my mate, Irresistible Force at Tanamira, Logan Holm. That's the other sponsor of our show at this stage. You never know. Maybe Games Workshop will jump on board one day if they need a R18 rated podcast to talk about how average they are and tear them to shreds a bit. But he, as of very recently, he's just upped his discount for Games Workshop products in his store. So really recommend you guys go down and check it out. It's a fantastic bloke.
What is the discount? What's that market?
Anything that's not direct order, I think is 20%. So it's a good discount. And if you do go through there, please put a note in the comments. We're actually in the process of organizing an affiliate link, just so you're aware, Ben. So that's definitely on the cards, which is very exciting.
Okay. An affiliate link.
So yeah, he's in the process of organizing us an affiliate link that people can go through just to kind of track what kind of influence we're having, which is fantastic. But yeah, look, massive. He's actually sponsoring a tournament in New South Wales. I have to get more details off him because he couldn't remember when I ran into him the other day. But yeah, Irresistible Force is one of the major sponsors down there. Trying to hook him up with someone to make some objective markers. Thought about maybe organizing some Gathering Storm objective markers. Haven't spoken to my podcast co-host about making Gathering Storm objective markers. Would love to hear if you guys want us to. Would love to know if you guys want us to make Gathering Storm objective markers, aka would you buy them? Again, we're not here to make money. I would literally tell you exactly how much it cost us to make and to post, and that's all I would be looking at.
That's what you'd pay.
Yeah, exactly.
We might try and make 50 cents.
Mate, that's pretty big profits there. Going through all the questions, there's only two that I think haven't really been touched on, and please call me out if I'm wrong. Oh, the famous battles one. I'll get back to you. There's 144. A quick Google search I did. I was like, oh, cool, 144 major battles. We'll get back into that. But the two that I quite like is where the Warp Spiders Phoenix Lord chilling. Short answer, Craftworld Kalor. Long answer, doesn't exist but does exist. And there's a book you can read about Craftworld Kalor that touches on the potential for a Warp Spiders Phoenix Lord. So if you want to know more about that, hit me up and I'll let you know what the book is called. And the next one, which is who would win in a fight between the Phoenix Lords. This took me all of 13 seconds to figure out as I went through all six or seven, if you count Illyrith, Phoenix Lords. And I went, look, the only one that's going to win is the one that trained them all. The OG, the one, the only, Assuman. The first of the Phoenix Lords who has trained every single Phoenix Lord. He knows them all. He would just wipe the floor with him, in my opinion.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Something we did talk about, Michael, is adding a bit of a pro tip in every episode on something to help make the average gamer a little bit less average.
Yeah.
And I had this bounce back thought, something I did last night. Sorry, just to end the Eldar lore part. I'm good at segueing.
Hadn't noticed. How's that GSC paint job going?
And the element that I wanted to bring up was, at the end of your movement phase, have a look at every model in your army. Have a think. If that gets shot off the objective, how am I going to take it back? If that blows up, will Deadly Demise hurt the model next to it? If I get charged next turn, can they consolidate into another unit? Are my spacings right? Is the cover set? Will I get that minus one? Just scan your deck before you declare the end of your movement phase and make sure you haven't exposed yourself and you are in a position to cop your opponent's next turn. That's something that I learnt pretty quickly at the start. I'd be like, oh yeah, I've got this guy and this guy, and if he's there, he can help him. Or hang on, he just got charged, and now they've consolidated, and then they're going to die next turn, and then, oh my god, holy shit. So, just stop, have a think, check everything before you are at the end of your movement phase, and move on. What do you think, Michael?
Look, games are won and lost in the movement phase. Deployment and movement are underrated, but oh so critical. I like to call myself a really active participant in my opponent's turn. And the way I do that is I look at every single thing they're doing and I think about how I'm going to react to that. And I look at, okay, I'm going to do this with this unit. And my opponent's obviously thought about that. So then they kill that unit. I go, cool, what's my next step? What's my backup? How am I going to deal with this? And it's the same in the movement phase. It's about looking and going, right, I have one model on this objective. If he can get to this model, I lose that objective. What am I going to do to safeguard? is my screen protected enough? Have I? And one of the best things you can do, and this is going back to playing Might and Tent, is go, can anything see this model? Can anything move to see this model? And your opponent's going to have to look and help you out and go, oh, yeah, okay, like, if this guy, okay, cool. Is there a way, like, oh, he moves 22 inches. Okay, cool. So I can't hide him at all. I'm going to be aware of that. But if you go, oh, yeah, if you tuck half an inch more that way and you had 6 inches left on your movement, you go, cool, I'll do that. It's so crucial and critical. And it happens a lot. Game three on a two-day tournament day. Game three on the Saturday.
Fatigue,
sloppiness. You go, yep, cool, this is safe. And your opponent, they don't have to tell you it's not safe. And when they turn and go, cool, this guy's going to shoot this. And you go, oh, I thought he was out of the thing. If you don't verbalize that, if you don't communicate that, like, that's on you. Like, you need to make sure that in your movement phase, your intent is just as clear, if not more clear in other phases. I have some mates who, like, and I'll do it the same. I go, cool, I've got a 7-inch movement. I'm exactly 14 inches away, which means when I move this model, it's a 6 to charge. Doesn't matter what happens now, if I bump or you bump, we've done this before anything else. Oh, now it's a 7. Like, oh, no, you measured. Like, it's definitely still just a 6.
It was,
things like that.
Correct. Intent was declared and there was agreement made. That's and it. It's something I speak to a lot of really good gamers about. The game is won and lost in the movement phase. And Napoleon would tell you the exact same thing. If you've ever read any excerpts from his famous victories, not the one at Waterloo, well, actually, the one at Waterloo, he lost due to his movement, his positioning. His, you know, Wellington had his spot up on the hill, and
it's always a bloody hill, isn't it? Yeah.
Correct.
Battle of Engine Court, same deal.
Engine Court and having all those bowmen just standing with volleys and volleys of Welsh arrows.
Yeah.
Welsh Hugh firing those arrows, and they had nothing. So, guys, just a pro tip. Remember, big guns never tire. Big guns shoot models off the table. Scary guys chase people down and fight them in combat. But where you set up, where you position, is going to have a big, big outlier on the points you score and surviving to turn 5 to optimize your score. It's a 5-turn game.
Unless I table you. But Eldar are weak now, don't worry. That's not going to happen.
No. So that's a wrap for us, guys. Keep the entries coming in for the corn models.
Yeah, we've had some crackers.
We've had some bangers. Some ChatGP ones, some what I think are personalized ones, which is also great.
Yeah, a couple of limericks.
We still have to agree on an independent scorer.
Review board.
We might have to go to Cine, I think.
I think we do. I think out of all the people.
Yeah, I think if he is a true devotee of Korn. I might see if I can find him on the interwebs and reach out to him.
Sounds like a good you problem. How long are you in Bali for, Ben?
Let's not talk about the end of Bali. Let's just talk about the start of Bali. I'll do a quick video from Spoils of War shop in North Denpasar, over in Sanur. I'll introduce the owner of that shop because most of us do travel to Bali. I'll do a bit of a video tour of his shop, see if I can get a game of combat patrol or something in, drink 30 bintangs.
When are we back next on the air? That's why I was asking, Ben.
It won't be next week, it'll be the week after. So
alrighty, so it'll be post teams tournament for me.
Alright, cool.
Like the 11th of August.
So we'll do a half teams tournament, half limerick read, and maybe you can come up with the next pro tip.
Ooh, I got you.
I got you, fool.
Thank you very much again, guys, for listening to us. As always, let us know what you think. Comment on the page. Personal message us.
Yep.
Show your friends this bang average bloody 40K podcast so we can get closer and closer to more and more of you in a completely non-sexual way.
Non-sexual.
Thanks again, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks, sir. See ya.